Mother Earth says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. And Father Sky says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. Say, take good care of us. Please do not hurt us. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. And we are here to be ourselves, to be with one another, to be with our surroundings, to be. And we are here to take care of ourselves, to take care of one another, to take care of our surroundings, take care.
Greetings. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat-Kitishi Native American Center. We are broadcasting on RFPI, Radio for Peace International, Global Community Radio. Akwe, welcome. This is your host, Ones Pritzker. Wolf Mountain Radio focuses on protecting Mother Earth, defending Native lands and Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices presents the situations facing Native peoples throughout the world with Native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Please listen now to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. Ho, Kanawatakwasin, to all of our relations.
Yeah!
music from the Blackfoot Confederacy Drum off their Canyon Records CD entitled Hear the Beat. That particular song was an honor song, which is often heard at powwows and honoring someone special. I featured that song as an honor to today's program guest, Mary Olson. Ashkwe, greetings and hello, everyone. Welcome to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. This is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker. Today's program, we share a conversation with Mary Olson, an anti-nuclear activist and staff member for many years with the fine organization Nuclear Information and Resource Service. Yad Kiddushi Native Center has networked with NIRS for a long time, especially fighting nuclear issues affecting tribal communities and native homelands. Mary Olson, whom I am honored to call my friend, is director of NIRS's Southeast Office. Mary visited Yad Kiddushi Native Center, where we spoke together about many serious nuclear energy issues. Yad Kiddushi Native Center, as an Earth Justice organization, has from our very beginning been fighting against global nuclear energy policy, nuclear power, and all of the serious aspects of nuclear development, namely mining and milling of uranium, nuclear waste, weapons detonation tests, radioactive contamination of air, land, and water, poisoning ecosystems, human health impacts, and the international transport of nuclear fuel and or nuclear waste by truck, railroad, or ship. Nuclear power's long record of serious safety accidents, radiation release incidents, and violations of monitoring and operation procedures provide little assurance that a global nuclear industry can really be trusted to protect all life on the planet, now and into the future, for many generations. What about nuclear accidents at power stations such as Diablo Canyon, Shoreham, Nine Mile Point, Midland, Marble Hill, Saybrook, Davis Bess, Comanche Peak, and others I could mention? Remember 3 Mile Island in 1979 and the efforts to cover up the truth of what happened by both government and industry officials? We know now that the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission in 1979 greatly underestimated the seriousness and amounts of radiation released at TMI. We now know that there were great problems with air monitors not working at 3 Mile Island. 1 week before the Harrisburg, PA accident, an NRC inspector named Jim Cresswell met with two NRC commissioners, Peter Bradford and John Ahern, to express his concern that the TMI reactors were unsafe and should be shut down until the problems corrected. We know his warnings were dismissed. Some who are concerned about corporate control of nuclear power advocate governments operating nuclear power plants. Remember Chernobyl in Russia? Yucca Mountain in the western Shoshone homeland of Nui Sorgabia, now called Nevada, the U.S. government's proposed storage site of America's nuclear waste has been publicly exposed to be unsuitable for radioactive waste storage. In testimony before the U.S. Senate, the chief of the U.S. Geological Survey scientist for Yucca Mountain admitted that as a result of political pressure, he lied under oath about the geological suitability of the planned nuclear waste repository. U.S. Department of Energy scientists have likewise admitted to not only falsifying scientific data, but also making up information about the long-term sustainability of Yucca Mountain as a result of political pressure in order to present a favorable picture for Yucca Mountain. The economics of nuclear power generation, which disproportionately impacts the poor, is an entire topic little understood by the general public, who bears the outrageous per kilowatt costs of nuclear energy. Remember the industry's promise? Nuclear power would be, quote, too cheap to meter, unquote. While nuclear policy should be of concern to everyone, in many ways, nuclear issues most affects indigenous peoples throughout the world. The history of nuclear development, both for military weapons as well as for commercial nuclear power, is a history of abuse to native peoples and exploitation of our sacred territories on Mother Earth. Not only has tribal lands been raped and sacred sites desecrated for uranium mining, but many of those who worked as miners are tribal people who have had little economic choice but to labor in horrific health and safety conditions in order to support their families. Most Native workers were never told of the grave health dangers from uranium mining, nor were they given any protective clothing or equipment. As a further insult, a number of American Indian homes and schools were knowingly built with radioactive adobe, which have caused many deaths and serious illness in Native communities. Carcinogenic, mutagenic, and teratogenic birth defects in American Indian families are now well-documented exposure effects. Precious aquifer water in very arid regions where uranium is mined have been greatly overdrawn and used up. Surface and underground water as well have been seriously contaminated with radioactivity. This, of course, has caused human health problems, as well as poisoning crops and livestock, which many Native people depend upon for subsistence. As an ecologist, I've long spoken out about how radioactivity becomes part of the food web, poisoning all life. Radioactive isotopes, now in the atmosphere, are often transported by wind and/or deposited from snow or rainfall, impacting many places on the Earth. The circumpolar Arctic, which in photographs look pristine, are now highly contaminated from nuclear fallout. A serious example is the case of the indigenous Arctic Sami, reindeer people, who can no longer live their traditional herding life as a result of the Chernobyl nuclear power plant explosion, whose radiation poisoned their Arctic tundra, including their reindeer. In what is now called the United States Southwest, many tribal nations' homelands have been so wasted by the nuclear fuel cycle that sacred lands have been turned into highly toxic dead zones that are now termed national sacrifice areas. This is a situation I've seen in person and reported on for many years. An example, my work with the In Defense of Sacred Lands project. In the traditional homeland of the Oglala Titiwan, some call Sioux Indians, Lakota communities such as Red Shirt, who have fished the Cheyenne River and used river water for irrigating their gardens for many generations, now have radioactive warning signs posted along the river. Longtime listeners to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, have heard our 9-program interview series with Defenders of the Black Hills coordinator, my friend Charmaine Whiteface, speak about many cultural and ecological issues affecting the Osete Sikawan, Great Sioux Nation. One serious problem are the numerous abandoned uranium mines and radioactive waste in their sacred Pahasapa. The Madiwa Canton, Dakota, who are more commonly known as the Prairie Island Indian Community in Minnesota, have had to, since 1973, live next to Xcel Energy's 2 nuclear power, 1,076 megawatt reactors called Prairie Island Nuclear Power Plant. In addition to the usual dangers of living adjacent to nuclear power plants, from routine releases of radiation venting into the air and toxic discharges into water, the Madiwa Canton
tribal community are also threatened by high-level radioactive spent fuel that are kept on-site in dry cast storage at Prairie Island Generating Station. Prairie Island is a floodplain of the Mississippi River. In the mid-1980s, my own Wabanaki Native Territory was threatened by a U.S. government proposed nuclear waste dump to be built on Penobscot land. This was after years of fighting against the Seabrook nuclear power plant that was built at a sacred coastal site where Indians called Winnemucca. The wonderful Quahog Clamshell Alliance that I and other Native and non-Native brothers and sisters were active in, although unable to stop Seabrook, at least till now, have prevented the planned nuclear waste dump being forced on Wabanaki land. The spirit of the Quahog Clamshell Alliance, which brought people of different cultures and backgrounds together to protect Mother Earth and our own human family from the insanity of developing nuclear energy, is needed now more than ever. The resurgence of nuclear power throughout the world requires people to come together again to defend Mother Earth and all life from a greedy, political, economic, insane nuclear power industry. One of the greatest public PR deceptions is how nuclear power is now being promoted as an environmentally friendly energy source for the 21st century, as concern about global warming is now headline news. Yat-Kitishi Native Center hopes this Wolf Mountain Radio program encourages people to fight to defend Mother Earth from nuclear energy. It's better to be active today than radioactive tomorrow. This is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker. It is now my great pleasure to welcome Mary Olson to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be sitting here with you, Ones. It's a real honor to have some of your time and the honor to be heard on this radio broadcast. So greetings to everybody who's listening. How did I come to work for Nuclear Information and Resource Service? Well, I've had this job for 17 years now, which is a bit of a shock. So going back to how I got there is an interesting story. I studied biology in undergraduate work, which was kind of also interesting. My father was an evolutionary biologist, and I guess I sort of fell into that field because I enjoyed seeing what I was studying. I enjoyed being able to use my senses and actually see the processes, unlike some of the other disciplines where it's all in the head. It was a struggle for me to get through school because I had a very active heart and I liked to be active, and school was not active enough for me. But while I was an undergraduate, I actually did hold a big meeting on nuclear power. This was back in 1979 in Portland, Oregon, and people were fighting the Trojan nuclear power reactor that was on the Columbia River. And there were several different organizations, including Native people, who were involved in trying to stop the Trojan nuclear power plant. So that was my first little teeny connection with it. And I honestly didn't stay focused on nuclear energy after that. I went on to have spiritual training in Zen Buddhist temples, and I needed a job. And so I pulled a few strings, and I got hired at Yale Medical School. I was living in Connecticut at the time. And 2 weeks into a new job in a very small lab with a new professor as my boss, unfortunately, I got contaminated with radioactive material. And what happened was really no big deal. It was a small petri dish that graduate student had used a couple days before with way more radioactivity than is normal in a research lab. But she didn't mark it. She didn't put that caution tape on it. And she gave it to me to use without telling me. So it was just one of the miracles that I ever even knew that I'd been contaminated. We don't see radiation. We don't smell it. We don't hear it. Radiation can be there impacting our bodies, and we just plain don't know it. So this puts the lie on the clean air technology, right? You just can't see the radioactive pollution coming out of the nuclear power plants. So I didn't see it in the lab, and unfortunately, I did find out. Why did I say unfortunately? Just because I've had to live with that knowledge all these years. So it really kind of kicked my butt. I probably got somewhere between half a REM and three REMs, we don't know. because I handled this thing for a week with no protection. Once I discovered what had happened, which was purely by accident, I threw the thing away, so there was absolutely no proof of what had happened. I put it in the radioactive trash, of course. But I went home, and I started having health consequences. Thankfully, nothing I haven't been able to live with, but certainly my immune system stopped working right, my hormonal system stopped working right, a metabolic disorder that runs in my family as a genetic condition was triggered immediately. I basically spent 5 years getting through the aftermath of that event in my life. I did try to sue Yale before I left, but I didn't have the money and the community that it takes to pull off a big action like that. And so I ended up realizing I didn't want to pose as a victim. I wanted to recover. And I went to Michigan to a little place that had been working on peace and justice, and I had gone to as a child to a children's camp called Circle Pine Center. And I was there for 5 years in that recovery time. Somebody, I'm not sure who, put me on the Nuclear Information and Resource Service mailing list. Probably a local organization that maybe I'd signed up on a table on a petition or something, and it got put through the system. And I started receiving envelopes in the mail. I kind of ignored them. One day I opened them up, and it was all about the deregulation of radioactive waste by the federal government, making it possible for nuclear waste generators to send nuclear waste to ordinary municipal landfills. This was a new policy they were trying to get through. This was 1990. Below regulatory concern is what they called it. And they also mentioned in this little mailing that this radioactive waste could end up being recycled, recycled with no label whatsoever into consumer products. And when I read that, I realized that what had happened to me with that little Petri dish could happen to somebody in a Kmart, or a grocery store, or a Sears store, or, you know, a playground. And believe me, it has been to some degree, but I, at that point, pretty much dropped everything I was doing, went on a quest, a spiritual quest, to find out how could I help. It kept leading back to this one woman, whose name is Diane DiRigo, who was leading the Stop BRC, Below Regulatory Concern campaign. No matter who I talked to, they said, call her. So finally the light bulb went on, and she'd already told me to organize the state of Michigan and pass a law against it. Well, I was running Circle Pine Center. It was a 24/7 job. I couldn't do that. But the light bulb went on. I realized I could give her my vacation. So I called her up, and I said, I can't do the state law for you, but I'll come, and you can use my labor for 2 weeks. That's what I have this year. That's how it started. She said, well, I can't pay your gas money, and I can't give you a place to stay. I said, no problem. I have gas money, and I have a place to stay. And I went and I filed paper for Diane DiRigo in 1990. By 1991, I was working full time.
Mary, in today's program introduction, I mentioned that there is now a growing interest in expanding nuclear power generation across the globe, in part due to the public relations disinformation campaign that promotes nuclear energy as both safe and as a so-called clean energy source that does not cause global warming. For many years, no electric utility in the United States have ordered any new nuclear power reactors. The nuclear industry has been in financial hardship, especially without federal subsidies paid by American taxpayers. Now, across the United States, there are a growing number of new nuclear power plants being planned. Some electric utilities are trying to expand existing nuclear power stations. Mary, what is your response to this resurgence of nuclear power?
One of the key things that's going on in the United States is it's been 30 years, actually 33 years, coming on 34 years, since the last reactor that was actually completed was ordered. So there's been nuclear power 24/7 in the United States during this time, but there hasn't been a single order in 33 years. And right now it's breaking out like chicken pox. And the reason it's happening is because Bush and Cheney put together this secret energy council first week in office. They had all kinds of secret meetings, and we later found out from lawsuits that the primary meetings were with the nuclear industry. They did not get this in their first term because members of the U.S. Congress did oppose funding nuclear in the energy bill for 4 years, but in the fifth year, the whole thing shifted enough that they got through an energy bill that put $14 billion on the table for any corporation that wanted to build a new nuclear power plant. So true to our name, that is our first and foremost project right now, is stopping new generation of reactors from being built in the United States. I have to say, what's happening is that the reason there wasn't an order for a nuclear power plant in all those years is this technology cannot compete. It's dangerous, it's deadly, it's not economic. The corporations themselves had backed off of it, and the only reason it's coming back is because there's tax dollars on the table and because they've come up with this lie, new lie. There's always been lies. The new lie is that nuclear power is the solution to climate change.
Kids in the schoolyard, cows in the field, in a Pennsylvania town, it's another day. But at Three Mile Island, something was wrong. In the power plant, not 2 miles away, valve jammed open, and the holding tanks blew, and the leak spread for miles around. With a bubble of hydrogen trapped under the dome, that plant damn near melted down. 3 Mile Island blew down their lives. Next time it happens, how many will die? Got our eyes on the future, got our feet on the ground. Gonna shut down the nukes, shut them down. Shut down the nukes, shut them down. Metro Edison said one thing, feds the reverse. The TV and press had their fun. Out of all the confusion, just one thing came through. No one knew what the hell was going on. Evacuation would have ended the game, so they said there was no reason to go. But they didn't say too much about workers at the plant, who as always caught the brunt of the blow. 3 Mile Island blew down their lives. Next time it happens, how many will die? Got our eyes on the future, got our feet on the ground. Gonna shut down the nukes, shut them down. Shut down the nukes, shut them down. The sun it shines, the wind it blows. There's a thousand different ways to save fuel. So when some corporation tells me we got no choice, they might as well be calling me a fool. They say the system works and no one was killed. They say they'll make them safer than before. But they're gambling with our children and they're gambling with the world. And their money don't seem worth dying for. 3 Mile Island down their lives. Next time it happens, how many will die? Got our eyes on the future, got our feet on the ground. Gonna shut down the nukes, shut them down. Shut down the nukes, shut them down. Shut down the nukes, shut them down.
Music from the anti-nuclear band Atomic Cafe. The name of that song was 3 Mile Island, referring to America's most serious nuclear power accident that occurred on March 28, 1979, near Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. The TMI Metropolitan Edison Generating Station consisted of pressurized water reactors manufactured by Babcock and Wilcox. As a result of mechanical problems and failures of Med-Ed plant operators, a loss of coolant accident occurred, causing a partial core meltdown of Unit 2. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yacht Kitishi Netta Center. This is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker. My guest in the studio is fellow anti-nuclear activist Mary Olson. Mary is the Southeast Regional Representative of the fine organization Nuclear Information Resource Service, NIRS. Mary, my next question concerns the economics of nuclear energies. Commercial nuclear power in America is not a cheap energy source. But utility industry claims that nuclear energy is competitive if it weren't for government subsidies, which is really our taxpayer money, construction and operating costs would be more outrageous than they are. The old cheap to meter slogan is a myth. Would you please comment on the economics issue?
Too cheap to meter is the old line, and it's a lie. And I'll have to give credit to my friend Dave Lockbaum, because I didn't come up with this, but he says too expensive to matter is what it really is. You know, this world, especially in this overextended bubble economy that the privileged people of this world, we're not privileged people, we think we're privileged people, that's the truth. You know, it's a bubble economy riding on everybody else's resources and everybody else's equality that has not been recognized. So this so-called bubble economy is also a myth. And in that myth, the only reason that nuclear power is being promoted again, and I'm just cutting to the chase here. I usually go through a 20-minute talk to come to this bottom line, but just cut to the chase. The only reason that nuclear power is being revived, that Bush and Cheney put $14 billion in direct subsidies and an unlimited number of billion in loan guarantees. I mean, we've just been through a big, huge fight all fall on loan guarantees. What does that mean? It means that the taxpayers are co-signing on commercial loans. It means if the corporation decides, oh, we're not going to finish this project, we're not going to pay it back, which, you know, there were over 300 reactors canceled between the 70s when that last one was ordered and now. So there's been a long history of canceling these projects. So if they were canceled again, the taxpayers would have to pay back those commercial loans. That's what a loan guarantee is. And they got $18.5 billion in loan guarantees for just 2008. Just 2008. They tried to get $50 billion for 2 years, so we did turn it down a little bit. They also tried to get no further congressional review whatsoever, just hand it to the Department of Energy and let them hand out these loan guarantees with no congressional oversight at all. We did get that stopped. So it's not like the fight wasn't worth it, but there was a lot of people fighting all fall about this issue, and they still got $18.5 billion. So that's a testimony to how much buy-in there is. And so cutting to the chase as to why that's happening, who gets that money? It's not Florida at Power and Light who will actually get to keep that money. They'll borrow it, or they'll get the incentive little payoffs from Congress with taxpayer dollars. That'll come in, but it'll go back out to who? To Toshiba, who's now Westinghouse. To Hitachi, who's now GE. To Kellogg Brown and Root. The Brown, who used to be ABB Boveri, is that B is Brown, as in Halliburton. We're talking this massive cash flow going into the deep pockets of the large engineering firms around the world, Bechtel. So this is not about solving the energy problem. It's not about solving the climate crisis. This is about continuing to take from people who have children to feed and elders to take care of and are barely making ends meet through their taxes and handing it to these incredibly large corporations. When you add it all up, the last reactors that came online cost $4.5 billion, with a B, billion dollars each. I'm citing the Vogtle reactors in Georgia that were $9 billion for two units. The current projection, not too surprising 30 years later, is double that. So you get one reactor for $9 billion. Moody's, the Wall Street firm, is saying 7 to 9, so I'm taking the high end there. But still, you know, 7 to 9 billion for a single power plant. How many jobs? I've been wanting to sit down and make some phone calls and get these guys on record as to how many jobs do they think are going to be permanent. But I can guarantee you it's way less than 500 jobs for permanent, not the construction, but the permanent year-round jobs. So, you know, if that's like $50 million a job, I mean, get real. So the economics is just not there. It's a scam. It is The same old, same old. The problem is that we're, I believe, in a real crisis. Not one we made, but nonetheless, not one that will go away just if we change our minds. I believe the climate crisis is real. And yet nuclear power cannot solve it. I did the math just yesterday, and if you doubled the number of reactors in the United States, you would still only take care of 1/15 the amount of greenhouse gases that the United States is putting out. 1/15. And it would cost you, you know, on the order of $750 billion for 1/15 of the problem.
It's time to end welfare as we know it and get those greedy chiselers off the dole. It's time to end welfare as we know it. Teach them a little self-control. For far too long we've allowed these corporate hogs to belly up to the public trough. No more welfare as we know it. No more handouts, cut them off. Now we should all be irate at this huge welfare state, right here in this mightiest of nations. AFDC is disgraceful to me. I'm talking aid for dependent corporations. Free enterprise, ha, the cruelest of lies. It cost us $200 billion just last year. If they paid their fair share, we'd have billions to spare. It's time to tell them the buck stops here. Let's consider Charlie Hurwitz, the CEO at Maxam, holding Redwood Forests hostage in a vicious little tax scam. It's clear cut we picked up the tab for Charlie's union busting, then paid him to pollute our water. Jesus, that's disgusting. Charlie won't repay $500 million that he stole from a Houston SNL. What say we kick him off the dole? It's time to end welfare as we know it and get those greedy chiselers off the dole. It's time to end welfare as we know it. Teach them a little self-control. For far too long we've allowed these corporate hogs to belly up to the public trough. No more welfare as we know it. No more handouts, cut them off.
That Taco Bell Chihuahua begs for bucks for Frito-Lay, and Poppin' Fresh from Pillsbury needs more dough every day. That thief Ronald McDonald and his sidekick Mayor McCheesy hamburglarize our treasury in ways that make me queasy. That nasty Little Mermaid took tax dollars overseas to hire thugs to bring poor Haitian workers to their knees.
It's time to end welfare as we know it and get those greedy chiselers off the dole. It's time to end welfare as we know it. Teach them a little self-control. For far too long we've allowed these corporate hogs to belly up to the public trough. No more welfare as we know it. No more handouts, cut them off.
They've been picking every pocket here from sea to shining sea. We must intervene to break this cycle of dependency. ADM and Cargill, General Motors, Ford and Boeing, ITT and Lockheed, and that welfare line keeps growing, growing, growing. Now Congress says we can't afford to subsidize the needy. But before we slash the safety net, let's tell the truly greedy.
We're gonna end welfare as we know it and get those greedy chiselers off the dole. We're gonna end welfare as we know it. Teach them a little self-control. For far too long we've allowed these corporate hogs to belly up to the public trough. No more welfare as we know it. No more handouts, cut them off.
It's for their own good.
No more handouts, cut them off.
And we need business.
No more handouts, cut them off.
And this means stadiums.
No more handouts, cut them off.
Music. music from singer-songwriter and fellow justice activist Ann Feeney off her CD entitled Have You Been to Jail for Justice? The name of that song was The Corporate Welfare Song, a very appropriate song considering the billions of taxpayer dollars the nuclear industry receives from Congress in the form of research and development money, subsidies, and nuclear loan guarantees. My guest today on Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices is Mary Olson. Mary is an anti-nuclear activist with the Nuclear Information Resource Service. Yaak Kedishi Native Center has long been fighting against nuclear power, and we support this fine organization, NIRS. Mary, my next topic for your comment is on how nuclear power is being promoted as an environmentally friendly energy source. The nuclear industry and even U.S. government officials advocate nuclear energy. Their PR campaign focuses on how using fossil fuels to generate electricity, such as coal, oil, tar sands, and oil shale, greatly contribute to global climate change. It is true that global climate change is one of the most critical issues facing Mother Earth. Indigenous peoples have been speaking out about global change for a very long time, as exemplified by the more than 8 international Indigenous peoples' global climate change declarations made over many years at different world climate summits. Listeners to Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices can learn more about Indigenous peoples and global climate change from our Wolf Mountain Radio program entitled An Indigenous Perspective on Climate Justice. In today's program introduction, I mentioned how Indigenous peoples throughout the world are most endangered by climate change. Loss of Arctic ice now greatly affects the survival of Inuit circumpolar peoples. South Pacific Islanders are under threat from rising sea levels due to global warming. So the PR deception campaign that nuclear power is a safe, clean energy alternative to carbon dioxide producing fossil fuels is to me a very dangerous and misleading promotion. Mary, would you please share your thoughts on this?
Here in the United States, they're using the climate crisis, which is quite real, as the excuse for socializing nuclear power, because the shareholders are going to take zero risk here. Wall Street is going to take zero risk here. All the financial risk is lying with either the people paying their electric bills, which will go up with nuclear power, or with the taxpayers, which are the same people. It's just which bill are you paying? So it's very clear that this excuse is tragic. I'm going to be speaking soon at a conference here in Florida where we're sitting, and their theme for the conference is what do we have to lose in the context of the climate crisis. I want to ask everybody to think about what we have to gain, because what we have to gain is sustainability. The climate crisis, the nuclear proliferation crisis, the foreign oil dependence crisis, the population crisis, all these big things are intertwined with each other. But fundamentally, they are the outcome of unsustainable living. And of course, Indigenous people are the people that everybody else should be looking to in terms of the model in the past for sustainability, because it was the Industrial Revolution that came out of Western Europe that has caused this unsustainability. So pretty major thought that these crises have given us the opportunity to turn around and gain sustainability. And I think we have to see that first. And when we see that, then we see that what we have to lose is pretty major. Sustainability is something really important. And nuclear power is not sustainable, so it's a false solution. So if we spend all our money, I mentioned that to double the number of reactors in the United States would cost $750 billion. to do that would only solve 1/15 of this challenge just in this country. I mean, that's an enormous price tag. We could definitely revolutionize the way that the people of this land are living by using those resources for energy efficiency, first and foremost, reducing the amount of energy in everybody's activity. The big, huge corporations are already doing this. We have a leader in Dow Chemical. Do I like them? No. Do I like that their toxic chemicals are now energy efficient? Yes. They actually spent 2 years and $2 billion, and they saved $3 billion in the 2 years, so they came out with a net profit of $1 billion from saving energy at every phase of their operation. People like Amory Lovins of the Rocky Mountain Institute were in on that, and people like Dr. Arjun Makajani at the Institute for Energy and Environmental Research have also been putting heads together with them. And believe it or not, for a fraction of the cost of doubling the number of nuclear reactors in the United States, we can do this. We can have a sustainable future because, happily, in addition to the indigenous people's history that we can turn to, there are also other people who have been visionaries, who have 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago said solar energy is the way, energy efficiency is the way. They're thinking outside the box and they're coming up with new ideas. And believe me, I'm just tickled that all of those new ideas that are much more sustainable than nuclear power are also cheaper and also more profitable, because I'm not sure we have the time to change all the headspace and all the thinking that people do in their daily lives. If we can just get them to understand that if Dow Chemical thinks that efficiency is profitable, and if Goldman Sachs can do leasing of solar panels and selling of shares, 20 and 30 year shares in those solar panels, you know, Goldman Sachs isn't selling solar panels, they're buying them, and they're selling shares in them. And my friends shake their head and go, oh, those capitalists are securitizing everything. Well, yes, they are, and they're making a profit on solar. If Goldman Sachs can do it, then why not a municipal solar district where the people do it, or a credit union? Why not a credit union buying solar panels and selling shares in it? So anyway, it's time, and it's coming, it's here, and it's really good news if we can turn around and embrace it and understand that crisis means opportunity.
Hey, yo, how we, 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 yo are listening to Yatkidichi Native Center's Honoring Mother Earth and Indigenous Voices. Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices focuses on protecting Mother Earth and defending Native lands and Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices presents the situations facing Native peoples throughout the world with Native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples. We are broadcasting on Radio for Peace International. Radio for Peace is the voice of peace, promoter of the environment, champion of human rights, denouncer of hate and injustice, advocate of the oppressed, defender of truth. Radio for Peace International is global community radio.
The music you just heard prior to Yatkidichi Native Center program identification was a round dance sung by Elgin Scabby Robe off his Canyon Records CD entitled Along the Way. The name of that song was The Walk. To many Indigenous peoples, the term walk refers to how we live on our sacred Mother Earth. Hopefully our journey cares for the well-being of all life now and into the future for seven generations. This is why fighting against nuclear power is such an important priority. I want to again thank today's program guest, Mary Olson of the Nuclear Information Resource Service. Listeners who wish to learn more about nuclear energy issues and ways to fight nuclear power, please visit NIRS's website, www.nirs.org. Once again, to learn more about nuclear energy and ways to fight against nuclear power, visit www.nirs.org. Nuclear power is not safe, is not sustainable, is not clean, is economically expensive, and is not a solution to the global climate crisis. Please listen next week for Wolf Mountain Radio's program 2, Fighting Nuclear Power, a conversation with anti-nuclear activist Mary Olson. Well, dear friends, we're nearing the end of our broadcast time together for this edition of Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. We shall conclude today's program with a special song by Oneida singer-songwriter Joanne Shenandoah off Silver Wave Records CD entitled Prayer for Peace. The name of the song is Messenger. Thank you for listening to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. This is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker. Aho, kinon wantokwasin to all of our relations.